Well, we'll hopefully cover Genesis 46 and 47 this evening, Jacob's journey to Egypt. To go on a pilgrimage is one of those concepts where the idea has changed significantly over the years. When we talk about going on pilgrimage in today's day and age, what you usually think of is it a visit to a particular location of religious significance. So Catholics will visit Lourdes. 6 million people a year will go to that place where they believe Mary appeared to a young girl as she was collecting firewood. Muslims will head to Mecca. Hindus will go to the Ganges to wash. Pilgrimage is seen as a place, a sacred place you go to, where you can carry out religious duties or meet with God in a particular way. As Christians, we have no need to do that. We might enjoy going to Geneva and seeing the church where John Calvin preached, or we might enjoy going to Israel and seeing some of the sites, but there are no sacred places for us as Christians. No places where we can say, God is in particular, he's there more than he is there. Or there's something I can do and connect with God over here, but I can't do it over there. But we are still pilgrims as New Testament Christians. And we're pilgrims in the sense that we recognise this world is not my home. We can never fully rest in this life. We're on the move. We're going somewhere. In these two chapters, Genesis 46 and 47, we see again what it means to be a pilgrim. The attention turns away from Joseph and his brothers, and it focuses in these chapters on Jacob. We see Jacob towards the end of his pilgrimage, but the journey hasn't ended yet. There's a few times when Jacob speaks on these occasions. So in particular, we're going to focus and zoom in on the moment Jacob actually speaks and look at what he says. But I want to mention tonight four things that being a pilgrim means from Jacob's life. Here's the first one. Being a pilgrim means you look to God for guidance. And for this, we're just looking at chapter 46 and verse 1. The end of chapter 45, I gave you the context earlier that Joseph has sent the brothers back. Go and get Jacob, bring him to Egypt. And so when Jacob sees these carts all ready to transport Jacob with all his possessions, in chapter 45 and verse 28, Jacob, Israel, says, it's enough. Joseph's alive, I'll go and see him before I die. So chapter 46, verse 1, we're told he takes his journey. He goes on his journey to Beersheba. Beersheba was the southernmost point of Canaan, which is where Jacob had been living. So if you imagine him travelling south, Beersheba is the last pit stop before the open desert on that long journey to Egypt. It's like the last truck stop before you head out into the wilderness to drive for hours and hours before you reach civilization again. So in that sense, purely on a physical level, it makes sense as to why Jacob is stopping there at Beersheba. But there's more to it than that. I do enjoy watching Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean is a family favourite of ours. But also, Mr. Bean is great for illustrations. I don't know if you've seen the Mr. Bean where he goes swimming and he looks up and he sees the high diving board and he thinks, oh, I can see all these children doing. That looks dead easy. And so up he goes, he climbs up the ladder and he reaches the top and he walks forward and he peers over and all of a sudden he's not quite so ready to go off the high diving board. He's peering over the edge. Terrified. And I think what happens, if I remember correctly, is he ends up clinging onto the diving board and some boys come and stamp on his fingers and down he goes. Now Jacob, I think, is like that. He's standing on the edge, peering out, thinking, am I going to take the plunge? Am I going to go to Beersheba? to Egypt. Now, part of that, I think, is simply Jacob's an old man. He's 130 years old. He's frail. He can barely walk. He needs to be carried. In chapter 47, he's carried in to see Pharaoh. He perhaps can't walk at all at this stage. He's going to be scared. What's the physical toll going to be on my body from this journey? He's going to be scared of an unknown country, language, culture. He's leaving behind everything he knows. But I suspect there's another bigger fear for Jacob, which is probably the biggest reason he pauses as well. Back in Genesis 15, verse 13, God speaks to Abraham, so Jacob's grandfather. He says this, "Know certainly that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them 400 years. Jacob knows, because God has said it, that there's going to come a point when the people of Israel become slaves in a foreign land. Not only that, God spoke to Isaac as well, Jacob's father. This is Genesis 26, verse 2. He says to Isaac, "Do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land of which I shall tell you." Now, if you're Jacob, thinking, hang on, God told my father Isaac not to go to Egypt. He told my grandfather Abraham that there's going to come a point when the people become slaves to a foreign country. How does all this apply to me? If God told my father not to go to Egypt, am I free to go? Am I allowed to? Or does that still apply to me? And I think that's why he goes to Beersheba. Because Beersheba is the same place that we're told Abraham called on the name of the Lord. And it's also the place, the same place, that God appeared and spoke to Isaac. Jacob wants those same things for himself. He wants to do what Abraham is doing. He wants to call on the name of the Lord. And he wants the same thing that Isaac had in Beersheba. He wants God to speak to him. Now, there's a valuable lesson, I think, here for us at this point. I'm sure that all of Jacob's emotions would have been pointing in one direction. I want to see Joseph. I'm desperate to go. I want to be reunited. I'm sure he would have been afraid, but I'm sure he would have found his heart pulling in one direction. And then all this providence just seems to open everything up. There are the carts ready to transport me. It's just all opened up for me. You couldn't blame him for thinking, this is all God's providence. Surely that means it's right. But for Jacob, he doesn't want to rely on circumstance or emotion. He wants to hear what God has to say. And that's why he's there in Beersheba. Because that ultimately is the test of what we should or shouldn't do. Not what are my emotions telling me, what feels right, not what just seems to have fallen into my lap, what seems to have clicked into place. Actually, it's, what does God say? What does his word tell me to do? We've got to keep going back to the Bible. Because otherwise, we find actually coincidences sometimes can even be opportunities to sin instead of God's providence. So that's the first thing tonight about being a pilgrim. Secondly, being a pilgrim means acting even when we're afraid. And that's chapter 46, verses 2 to 4. In verses 2 to 4, God speaks to Jacob. And he gives him four promises just in those verses. Firstly, he says, he will make a great nation of Jacob. I will make of you a great nation there, in verse 3. The promises God has previously made are going to be kept in Egypt. They're going to become a great nation. Secondly, God says, I will be with you. He promises Jacob his presence there in Egypt. Thirdly, God says, and I will bring you back again. So that nation has a future far beyond all the years they're going to spend in Egypt. You're going to come back. You're going to go back to Canaan. Again, that promise will be kept too. And fourthly, he says, Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. In other words, Joseph will be there when you die. He will close your eyelids in that final moment. So Jacob, not only are you going to see him, your son, you're going to be with him until the moment you die. Four promises God gives him there. So Jacob can be confident. God has spoken. He knows what God is calling him to do. God is saying, go. Go to Egypt. But notice as well that God also says to him, in verse 3, do not fear to go down to Egypt. Why does he say that? Well, surely it can only be because Jacob is afraid. He is going to be scared as he goes on this journey. He knows it's right because God has told him, but he's still afraid. That same phrase, do not be afraid, comes up again and again and again in the Bible. Even just in Genesis, Abraham is told, do not be afraid. Hagar is told, do not be afraid. Later on, Joshua is told, do not be afraid. Gideon is told by God, do not be afraid. Elijah is told, do not be afraid. There are loads of times when the whole nation of Israel is told, do not be afraid. And Jesus comes and he walks out on the water to the disciples on the boat. And what does he say? He says, it's me. Don't be afraid. Why does that phrase come up so many times in the Bible? With so many different characters, so many different temperaments, so many different situations. It's got to be for this reason. It's because there are lots of things in life that scare us. Sometimes we think to ourselves, am I just being a bit of a wimp to be afraid right now? Don't I just need to just push this to one side and get on with it? Am I just being a wimp here? Actually, this sentence, this phrase comes up again and again in the Bible because God knows we do get scared and we need to be reminded. There is no situation in life too big for God to handle. No situation he hasn't faced before. Nothing that can't scare him. Jacob's God is our God. He says to everyone who's ready to trust him, don't be afraid. Whatever you have lying ahead this week, however new or uncertain it feels, God says, don't be afraid, because I'm with you. So they go. Up to verse 27, we've got this record of this whole family being shifted across to Egypt. And in verse 28 onwards, you have the reunion everyone's been waiting for. Joseph comes in and he falls on his father's neck and he weeps there for a while. And in verse 31 onwards, into chapter 47, there's this little plan Joseph has made. Make sure you tell Pharaoh that you're a shepherding family, Jacob. Why does he do that? You get to 47 and verse 6, and Pharaoh says to Joseph, here, have the land of Goshen. Why is it important? Why is it relevant to have the land of Goshen as shepherds? Joseph's making sure his family isn't going to be dispersed. Because that's the big danger in Egypt. They could be there and they could take on Egyptian worship and practices and they could just become absorbed in that huge empire. Joseph's making sure they're going to stay separate, their own land. Even the fact that they're a shepherding family, so they need their own space. God's been planning that for centuries, that's going to happen, that they're going to stay as a distinctive nation of Israel. Let's just ask one more question before we move on, though. Why does Jacob have to go to Egypt anyway, though? Couldn't God have just kept the whole family in Canaan, which is where they're going to end up in the long run anyway? Why does God make Jacob confront his fears and take that long journey? But there is a reason for it. There are lessons God's people can only learn in Egypt. they're going to learn there what it is to be slaves. They're going to see God's powerful hand with those plagues that get sent. They're going to learn about the Passover, and they'll learn from that what it means for a lamb to be killed on their behalf. They'll see the Red Sea parted. They'll see the victory that God brings. They'll learn wandering in the wilderness. In all these ways, we could go on. There are lessons God's children can only learn as pilgrims going through a foreign land. And there are lessons God wants us to learn that we can only learn as pilgrims. That's why we are pilgrims. And we've got to keep that sense of identity. That is what we are. Thirdly, being a pilgrim means you're a pilgrim your whole life. That's chapter 47, verses 7 to 10. In these few verses, Joseph brings his father in to meet Pharaoh. He has to carry him in and set him down in front of Pharaoh. And the first thing Pharaoh says to him in verse 7 is, "How old are you?" Children, that's not a polite way to start a conversation, okay? Please don't copy Pharaoh and go up to someone you've never met before and say, "How old are you?" I guess he's the Pharaoh. He's the king. He can do what he likes. Jacob says in verse 9, he tells him he's 130. People lived for longer in those days, before the flood, when the world was very different to the world we have today. Lifespans were longer, and now it's after the flood, but lifespans are reducing back to the length we know to be normal today. Now Jacob replies to Pharaoh by talking about his pilgrimage. If you look at verse 9, you'll see he talks about the days of the years of his pilgrimage twice, right at the start of the verse and right at the end as well. The word pilgrimage is very rarely found in the Bible. I don't know if you find that surprising, because I did when I spotted that. It's only in one other place in the whole Bible, in Psalm 84. So it's important that we notice Jacob's language, talking about pilgrimage, because that's how he sees his life. He talks about the days of his life, of his pilgrimage. I also want you to notice what else he says to Pharaoh. He says, "Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life." Now, sometimes you meet grumpy old men. Those men who just grumble about everything. Things aren't how they used to be. Nothing's right. This world, these people, everything's wrong. Maybe you know a grumpy old man. Maybe you're married to one. Maybe your dad's one. Maybe you're one. Maybe we have some grumpy old men here tonight. That's not Jacob. Jacob is not just being a grumpy old man saying, "Everything's wrong. My life's been full of evil." Actually, he's just stating the facts. And if you think about his life, I think you'd agree. His life has been full of awful things. Jacob grew up in a complicated family situation. He did some things that were wrong himself, but he ended up leaving home when he was young because his brother wanted to kill him. Esau, that was. So he goes and he stays with his uncle Laban, and he works for him, and he does it because he wants to marry this wonderful, beautiful woman, Rachel. But at the end of 7 years, Laban tricks him. He gives him Leah instead. He's been deceived. And there's another 7 years of work. When he does eventually marry Rachel, they have to deal with the fact that she's barren. He has a daughter, Dinah, but she's defiled. She's raped in a most horrific account. And he loses his wife, Rachel. He sees his son squabbling. He believes he's lost his son, Joseph, torn to shreds by wild animals. Then he faces famine, potential starvation. He faces the prospect of losing another son in Simeon, who's kept back in Egypt. Any one of those things would be enough for us to say, life is painful. He's gone through all of them. Now maybe Maybe, though, you do feel you could empathise with Jacob. Maybe there has just been, it just feels like your life's been full of sorrow and heartache. And the point here isn't to say, well, look, it's not as bad as Jacob. Actually, there are loads and loads of sad, painful things in life. And maybe you do feel you can relate to how Jacob describes his life, and you can relate that to your own. But it does help us to see we're not alone when we feel that way. But actually, very often that is the nature of being a pilgrim. And these things come in life to remind us we are pilgrims. We are only temporary residents in this world. Being a pilgrim means we realise, actually, this world is never going to satisfy me. There are so many ways it's going to disappoint us. Of course this world doesn't satisfy. Why would we ever long for another world if it did? For some of us, the danger is we lose our sense of what it is to be a pilgrim because we get so caught up in the plans of this life. Plans for how we're going to decorate our house. Plans for what we're going to do when we go on holiday. Excitement that series 2 of that TV programme we really enjoyed is coming back. In all sorts of ways, we get so excited about things in this world. And sometimes some of those hard times come to bring home that message again. This world is never going to satisfy you. Of course it's not. Every time the doctor says, that prescription will sort you out, and it doesn't. Every time the people at the garage say, okay, your car's fixed, it's working again now, and 2 weeks later, it's broken down again. It just goes to show us, of course this world will never satisfy us. Because we're not made for this world, we're pilgrims, travelling somewhere else. Now, I just want to notice one more thing about Jacob. At this point, Jacob is 130 years old, but he's not retired from being a pilgrim yet. It's at the age of 130 that he has to emigrate, pack up his belongings and move away to a strange land and make a new life for himself. Remember, he's so old and frail, he's carried in to see Pharaoh. Our world has an unrealistic view sometimes of what it means to be retired. Now, I'm aware I'm talking to retired people as someone who's not retired, and that's always dangerous, but I think I know enough retired people to know that retirement is not always what it's cracked up to be, what our world wants us to think. But it's just like being... It's sold to us sometimes as being heaven. The time when you can do whatever you want. Go wherever you like. And yet actually, so often retirement doesn't meet that expectation. Maybe you had so many hopes and plans for your retirement. But actually you find now retirement can be lonely. Sometimes it can be boring. Sometimes there are still lots of family responsibilities and you didn't realise that was going to happen. And anticipated that your body is just going to make some of the things you dreamed of doing in retirement impossible. You know, that round the world trip you wanted to do, actually it's just not feasible now. You didn't realise there was still going to be so much work to do in retirement. Jacob's here to remind us the whole of life is a pilgrimage. And that doesn't mean we don't retire, and it doesn't mean we don't enjoy the pleasures of that stage of life. But it does mean we don't put our hope in reaching that stage of life. For those who aren't yet retired, I think that's the lesson for us here. I remember being in work, talking to my colleagues, one of our favourite things to talk about is, how many years is it can I retire? What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? And it's like this nirvana that everyone can't wait for. Being retired won't satisfy us. And there's a reason for that. That's not our ultimate destination. We're pilgrims. Don't lower your sights and settle for just being retired. There's an ultimate hope. There's a far greater goal to look forward to than that. And that brings us to the final point. Point number four. Being a pilgrim, it means you keep your eye on the promised land. That's chapter 47, verses 27 to 31. I'm aware there's verses we've not commented on here, but that's because we're really focusing on Jacob at this stage of life. So verses 27 to 31, we're told here that Israel dwell in the land of Egypt, in Goshen. And we're told in verse 27 they have possessions there, they grow, they multiply exceedingly. It's interesting to note that's the first time Israel has been used, that word has been used to refer to them as a nation. Because the change is happening. Remember, Israel is Jacob's name. It's usually just referred to up to this point as just being him, that one man. But now, Israel has started to be referred to as a nation of people. Jacob lives there, I'm told, for 17 years, in verse 28, till he reaches 147. And then it draws near for the time for him to die. So he calls Joseph to him. He makes his dying request, verses 29 and 30. Please don't bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. You shall carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burial place. Now, we still do that sometimes today. Some families have a family graveyard where they have their own plot, and there are some people who sort of bought their bit in that graveyard, so they know they're going to be buried back home. Maybe they don't live there anymore, maybe none of the family live there, but that's the graveyard, the family place. I think Jacob's doing much more than that. No, this isn't just a sort of a patriotic thing of wanting to be buried back in Canaan. What's motivating Jacob is Jacob believes there is a future for God's people in Canaan. He believes the promises God has made, that they are going to enter that promised land. Yes, they're going to be in Egypt, but they're going to come back again too. So as Jacob reaches the point of his death, what he's thinking about, what occupies his mind, is God's promises to his people, the future of God's people. He's saying in the way he dies, this is not the end. There is victory and a future for God's people. But the land of Canaan, the promised land for us, is the new heavens and the new earth. That's what everything in this world is leading towards. A day when Jesus comes again and remakes this earth, brings heaven down to earth here. We're going to reach the promised land. A place where we don't wake up in the morning with a headache. A day when, a place where we never feel lonely. Where we never feel wearied by the washing machine breaking and I've got to pay out money to sort it out. But all I really do is I get my washing machine back again. All those daily frustrations of life. A place where we can go skydiving and on a world cruise. A place of lasting pleasure and thrilling delights where Jesus himself is present at the centre. For Jacob, what keeps him going in his pilgrimage is remembering God's promise of the promised land. So let me just tell you a story to close. 1952, there was a young woman named Florence Chadwick, and she attempted to swim just off the coast of California. She wanted to swim from an island called Catalina Island to the mainland of California. She's a good swimmer, she'd done this sort of thing before. The weather was foggy, though, so as she set out on her swim, she could barely even see the boats that were accompanying her just to keep her safe and go with her. She swam for 15 hours, and after that, she was ready to give up. But her mum, who was in the boat going alongside her, said to her, "You're close, you're nearly there, you can make it." But she gave up. They pulled her out of the water and put her into the boat. It was only as she got into the boat that she could see past the fog that she was only about half a mile away from shore. And she said the next day in a news conference, "All I could see as I was there swimming was the fog. I think if I could have seen the shore, I would have made it." Now, there are lots of things that cause a fog for us in our pilgrimage. Things that can make us forget we're even in a race at all. That there is actually a final destination we're moving towards. We get so bogged down in things, we think this is all there really is. There is a final destination. There is a place we are going and heading towards. So we need to do whatever it takes to push that fog to one side. And remember the great goal. It's Paul in Philippians 3. He says, "One thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press towards the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." That's what it means to be a pilgrim, to press on towards the goal. So that's what we've seen with Jacob. Seen being a pilgrim means we're looking to God to guide us as to the way forward. It means we're acting even when we're still afraid. Jacob still gets up and goes. It means you're a pilgrim your whole life. Your whole life is a pilgrim. And it means you keep your eye on the promised land. It means we remember that we are actually going somewhere. We are on a journey as pilgrims. Well, let's close by singing. I'm going to sing number 481.